on to item number seven, Mr. Briggs, Pacifico Azul, Inc.
Yes, this is an enforcement case for consideration of an administrative civil liability order, and we have an opening statement for you.
Okay. This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of an administrative civil liability order against Pacifico Azul, Inc. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedures that were provided to the parties. Designated parties are as follows: Regional Board Enforcement Team and Pacifico Azul, Inc. The designated parties and their witnesses are subject to cross-examination. The enforcement staff will be allowed 30 minutes for their presentation, cross-examination, and a closing statement. Pacifico Azul, Inc. will be allowed 30 minutes for their presentation, cross-examination, and a closing statement. All other persons will be allowed 3 minutes. The chair may provide additional time at his discretion. A timer will be used. Board members and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. For purposes of this hearing, the functions of staff and counsel are separated. Enforcement staff who are proposing this action have had no communication with the board members or the board's advisors, other than for non-controversial procedural matters. For this hearing, the enforcement team consists of Harvey Packard, Todd Stanley, Michael Thomas, Elaine Saul, and Allison Jones. They are advised by counsel Yvonne West from the State Water Resources Control Board's Office of Enforcement. The board's counsel, Frances McChesney, has not advised the enforcement team in this matter. Ms. McChesney and Executive Officer Roger Briggs will be advising the board. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address, unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. Even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, please stand. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
Yes.
Answer? I do? Okay. Anyone not answer, I do? All right. Thank you. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Central Coast Water Board Enforcement Staff. 2. Pacifico Azul, Inc. Representatives. Should this be a 3 here?
Yes.
It jumps to 5.
Right.
Okay. 3. Representatives of agencies. 4. Other interested persons. And 5. Summation or closing statements by the Pacifico Azul, Inc. and enforcement staff. Please state your name, address, and affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before you testify. We will begin with testimony by staff. At this time, evidence should be introduced on the following issues: whether the regional board shall issue, reject, or modify the proposed ACL order. We will now begin the hearing. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we get started on the first part, which will be the enforcement staff's presentation, I wanted to again point out to the board that we have a supplemental sheet, yellow, and I believe we mailed this out last week. And it is simply transmitting the proof that the owner-operator of Pacifico Azul, Inc. was served with the hearing notice on November 24th, 2009, satisfying the 10-day notice provision. And I have the timer ready to go here.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Harvey Packard. I'm on the enforcement staff. And we'll first hear from Todd Stanley, who will give a brief review of the facts of this case.
Good morning. Todd Stanley with the enforcement unit. In July 2004, this board adopted the conditional waiver for discharges from irrigated lands, also known as the Irrigated Ag Waiver or Irrigated Ag Order. The order required qualifying farms to enroll by January 1st, 2005. Pacifico Azul was one of about 80 farms that failed to meet that enrollment deadline. Staff followed that with a letter and an NOV designed to prompt the discharger to comply. The discharger did not respond, so in December 2007, the Assistant Executive Officer issued ACL order or ACL complaint number 2007-101. The discharger responded by waiving its right to a hearing within 90 days and agreed to pursue settlement talks. The discharger's signed waiver also stipulated that the board would provide at least 10 days notice before a future hearing. Over the 3 months following the complaint, the discharger did comply with several of the order's requirements by enrolling, paying monitoring fees that it had owed, and documenting training. To resolve the complaint's allegations, enforcement staff proposed settlement terms in October of 2008. The discharger agreed to the terms over the phone. However, when we sent the documents for signature, they were returned to us unclaimed. After multiple phone calls, we were successful in delivering the proposed settlement to the discharger in May of 2009. That letter also notified the discharger that if it did not sign the settlement agreement or settlement terms, that staff would recommend that the board adopt an ACL order for a liability amount no less than that contained in the complaint, or about $9,000. The discharger did not respond to those proposed settlement documents, bringing us to today's item, which supports the board's issuance of an ACL order for no less than $13,000, and that amount includes the staff costs since issuing the complaint. On November 24th, staff successfully served the discharger with notice of today's hearing and therefore met the 10-day notice requirements in the original hearing waiver. If the board adopts an order today and the discharger fails to pay any monetary penalty within 30 days, we will forward that order to the Attorney General's office for collection. And with that, staff would like to recommend the board's adoption of ACL Order 2009-64 as proposed. And if you have any questions, we'd like to address them now. And I believe Yvonne West, our counsel from Office of Enforcement, would like to come forward as well.
Any board questions for the enforcement team at this point? We do have a representative from Pacifica Azul that is here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a couple of
questions. Okay, Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah, could you go back one slide? This is just some clarification. Oh, maybe. Okay. On the fourth item down, staff issued letter and NOV. When was that?
The first letter went out in the middle of 2005. The second in 2006. The NOV went out in 2006.
Okay, so that was that was over a year before the complaint was issued.
Right.
So, okay. And then my second question is the amount, just for clarification, the amount that you're asking for in the ACL is the amount of the original agreement plus additional staff time.
Right. Yeah, there was a little over $9,100 in liability in the original complaint, and we estimated 25 hours of time spent since the issuance of the complaint.
So there was no additional penalties added on?
No.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Hayashi?
How many acres is Pacific Azul Farm?
Well, at the time they were enrolled or we were seeking enrollment, it was 137 acres. I'm not sure if that's current acreage that they're working.
Okay. We've had previous ACLs before us. Are we Are we coming up with a number based on the number of acres farmed, or the number of acres that we want to have?
Yeah, the number of acres figures heavily in both the fees that they pay for monitoring, the state board fees for enrollment, and therefore in the liability that we're assessed.
So it's safe to say that we made every attempt to contact these people after they agreed to the settlement via telephone.
Yes.
And in all of our attempts, we've been basically blown off.
We haven't received any responses.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
Just a question.
Mr. O'Malley.
And I'm just reviewing, make sure I understand this board letter or a letter sent from you to Roger Briggs, and it outlines the correspondence history. And I assume this is a full record of all attempts to contact the party and shows anything we received in writing in return. There's nothing else other than this record for this time period. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And would there also be any phone conversations and dialogue recorded anywhere in addition to this?
The staff making those calls did not have a log of the specific content.
Okay.
Mostly because there were calls that were made and there was no answer.
Okay.
Or no return call.
If there was any phone contact, would that generate any kind of a note or thing that would appear for a report?
It could. It just depends on the staff's habits and how they log their phone calls.
So we don't have a particular policy for documenting any thing outside of a written response.
And yeah, I think generally it's an approach. It just depends on the nature of the issue. If it's an enforcement issue, generally there is a better effort in terms of actually documenting what it is that you discuss. But general day-to-day stuff, just trying to get a hold of somebody, there wouldn't be a log typically.
So for on an enforcement issue like this, if there's any phone conversations or attempts, you've got a policy to provide documentation?
No, I don't know of a policy that requires staff to do that.
Okay, but you're saying if there was any, if a call was completed and there was anything substantial, that would be documented in your opinion?
Yes, typically, yes.
Typically?
And we've had other cases where we've dealt with, say, stormwater issues, where phone conversations have come into the notification process, and the date, who they spoke to, and the content of those that contact has typically been recorded.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And one more question.
Yes, go ahead.
If you go back on page 4, table 1, you show Strawberry Services at 195 acres, and you show Pacific Azul at 137 acres. Then you have the recommended liability, and it shows on table 2, Strawberry Services, we have a settlement liability of $3,000.
Correct.
If Pacific Azul would have come through, would we be looking at the same thing? Would they have been able to achieve a settlement similar to that?
Yeah, we don't generally put forth evidence of what was offered in settlement in the hearings going forward, just because generally.
But is it safe to say, had they cooperated, it would be a better outlook?
Yes.
Okay, anything else for the enforcement team presentation at this point?
Yeah, just real quickly, again, Yvonne West, staff counsel from the Office of Enforcement. I just wanted, along the lines of Member O'Malley's question, I wanted to provide you just a brief procedural summary of what's gone on in this case. The deadline for submission of evidence and written comment in this case, was established when the first hearing notice and the ACL complaint was sent out. And the waiver that was signed by the dischargers in this states that the submission of evidence deadlines and written comment is not automatically extended. Then, if you'll notice, the letter where we transmitted to today's notice of hearing for today's hearing provided a contact to Ms. McChesney on the advisory staff for any request to extend that deadline. No request was was made, and at this time, enforcement staff has not received any written submissions of evidence, comments, or otherwise from the discharger for our consideration in this matter. I just wanted to highlight that for the board.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd like to just clarify, being new, and make sure I understand this. Then in your written communication and order, there comes a point where any further verbal conversation is really not acceptable, and anyone is directed to contact the attorney, and that would be, that's a clear statement, and that would be our policy.
Yeah, any request for extension of deadlines would be a hearing procedure matter, which would be decided by the hearing staff, not the enforcement staff. It's a separation of functions. So we provided a contact to the hearing team because they would have to make the decision to extend those deadlines upon request from the discharger. And also, I also wanted to address your phone call issue. I believe the most substantive phone call is documented in one of the letters that was sent to the discharger was the conversation concerning settlement and a conveyance of an intent to settle for under the terms that were later sent in a written document, and that document was not returned.
Okay, but that conversation was documented
in the subsequent letter transmitting the settlement terms.
Okay.
Yeah.
And once that notice occurs, that future conversations should be directed to a staff attorney. Would any phone conversations be documented at this end then? For part of the record?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I noticed in the procedure that that's been laid out here for me to follow, wouldn't we normally allow the discharger to cross-examine the enforcement team? Okay. So we'll do that just as part of their presentation. Okay, Ms. Bozarth, did you want to address the board? You'll have 30 minutes, and you can... Does that include the cross-examination time?
Yeah, so okay. It would be appropriate to ask at this time if you had any questions to ask of the regional board staff.
Okay, my name is Rebecca Bozarth. I was the owner of Pacific Vessel when it was in operation. It is not in operation currently. I'm not real clear as to. I'm not addressing the accusations. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm sorry to appear in this capacity in this mode. I very much consider myself part of a very honest, a very conscientious approach to water quality in my farming. Where I fail is in my overwhelmed paperwork situation. I'm just a single person running a growing operation, and I currently, in the new company that I'm running, I do have a person helping me with the paperwork. That doesn't in any way mitigate what has happened in the past. I would like to address everything I understand that has been presented. In 2008, I worked to, and I see in the paperwork that it is noted that I worked to confirm. I had started the enrollment process earlier, and then it stopped, and several things happened in the interim, the company went from Pacifico Azul, which was a general partnership, to Pacifico Azul, a sole proprietorship, and at that point in 2000, and farther on in 2008, I started to get more caught up with everything. On the paperwork end of it, I finished the enrollment in the waiver process and paid the fines and the items that are listed. Towards the end, I think in October of 2008, I did receive a phone call and I did sign something that I went and picked up certified mail that agreed to pay a $3,000 plus fine to settle the matter because I thought I had that money available, and I fully intended to do it. At that same point, as the housing crisis hit, the person who was more or less my business partner had his line of credit basically dissolved, and so in the ensuing months, I was expecting reimbursement about a half $1 million worth of invoices, and I was notified in December the end of December in 2008 that I would not be reimbursed. And so that, not that it's an apology, but at that point, things pretty much dissolved in general. Pacifico Azul, I have not filed for bankruptcy for Pacifico Azul. In the last year, I've farmed 70 acres as a different company, and I've been addressing, I've paid about $150,000 of outstanding debts that corresponded to that $500,000.
Ms. Bozarth, can I just interrupt you and ask one question while you're going through this? And I apologize for the interruption, but this current operation, is it enrolled?
I've just changed the same. When I spoke to someone, the ag waiver number that I have, she led me to believe that I would just change the name on that. It's the same ranches, it's the same ranch plans. And she sent me a form, and I filled out the form.
Who's that? Who is she?
Lila.
Okay, is that a member of the water board staff?
It's the agency staff that she works at the CCWP, is that what it's called?
Okay. So my question is your, when did you start farming these 80 acres?
70 acres.
Yeah, the 70 acres under a different name.
Well, it continued under Pacifico Azul, and it changed over in about the middle of February. I guess you could say it was under Pacifico Azul originally.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Basically, I'm guilty as charged on the paperwork end of it. On the farming end of it, I'm proud to say that I'm a model, for other growers too. I work almost this time of year on a daily basis in terms of with my crews and ensuring to the best of my ability water quality. I've farmed a lot on erodible soils in the past in the Watsonville area on very sandy soils, and I've worked extensively, especially in the beginning of my strawberry career when I was in that highly erodible area, with a lot of different agencies, and we put in basin projects on one of my ranches and hosted field days. And I only say that in defense of myself in terms of trying to protect water quality. I am wholly committed to protecting the water quality, and I apologize for my failings in paperwork and in the corresponding responsibilities. Do you have any other questions for me?
I do.
Mr. Hayashi.
You made mention that Pacific Azul was a partnership and then a sole proprietorship.
Yes.
Is Pacific Azul in any way a corporation?
Pacifico Azul, the first Pacifico Azul in 2004 was a general partnership. There were two of us. And in 2005, it became an S-Corp, Pacifico Azul, with myself as the sole proprietor.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other board questions? For Ms. Bozarth at this point in time?
Mr. Chair, she says she is farming 70 acres. What's happening with the other 60-plus acres?
My acreage in strawberries is it's a variable thing from year to year, depending on what the what shipper I'm working with or what. In the Watsonville area, basically, you leapfrog from ranch to ranch, and sometimes you plant more, sometimes you plant less. In 2007, I believe it was, I planted the Hamby Ranch, and then 2008, I was still there, and in 2009, I was also still there. In 2010, I'll be on two separate different ranches.
Okay. Mr. Hodgen?
Ms. Bozarth, what would you like to have as the outcome of this hearing?
I would like to have a reasonable payment plan that I could address my responsibilities, whatever the costs involved are. And as I mentioned, I need to address some very large financial burdens currently, and most importantly with the IRS, so that I have monies available to pay other bills at the same time. I would like to get that, and I'm working with an attorney and an accountant and a CPA on that. And the plan is to use my equipment as leased to the new company, and therefore I would be generating income that goes into the Pacifico Azul account to pay existing debts. And I would like to have that addressed on some sort of payment plan that I could afford to do as soon as possible.
Willing to accept the $13,000 amount in the claim, providing that a plan can be created that would allow you to pay it? Is that what you're saying?
if that's the most reasonable amount in your eyes, I understand fully that there are a lot of expenses that I have incurred for you, and I apologize for that. I'm embarrassed by that, quite frankly. But whatever you deem reasonable as the amount, I'd like to work out a payment plan.
Have you discussed with staff what might be a payment plan that you could handle?
No, not yet, because as I mentioned, my first priority in terms of trying to, I want to be able to pay bills that Pacifico Azul, the old company, has incurred from Pacifico Azul monies. And in order to do that, I need to clear my path with the IRS so that, and the state of California, because among other bills that were checks that were out at the time that I was notified I wasn't going to be reimbursed were things such as EDD checks, and there are levies that get put on my account. And this is one of the reasons that I was mentally and physically avoiding the $3,000 payment that I agreed to, is because I didn't know what money I would have available or not. Currently, I recently had a large check that I deposited there, only to find out that that may be levied against also. So what I first want to do is clear that account to where I can say what I can dedicate as payments.
Okay, that helps. I understand better now. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. As I understand it, during the initial period you've come into contact with the water board, you've gone from different types of ownership, but there were two persons involved, and now it's down to just yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? And also during this period, it sounds like the maximum acreage was less than 150 acres. We're down to 70 at this point.
The maximum acres in 1 year was actually 100 something, closer to 200. This last year, I was at 70 acres, rented acres, and this next year I'll be up more towards 150. It has been variable.
And I think we all understand it's been a lot of financial challenges the last couple of years for everyone. But during that period, you acknowledge that you may not have done the best you could on the paperwork side. You said that you really try to do a good job on being a steward of the land and the water quality issues. What is your understanding of any of the actual problems related to water quality that's a result of your farming operations?
My farming?
You're aware of, separate from the paperwork.
Sure. Well, I'm a strawberry grower, and that presents some unique challenges because of the topography and the length of time that the strawberry field is in production. But there are pluses and minuses. It presents unique chances to put more lasting structures into place. As I mentioned, we had one water basement basin, one water basin that we built specifically to address issues that had been ongoing on one ranch to capture sediment and to addressed many issues in strawberries. When you put plastic on the beds, depending on the direction of your beds and depending on the slope that you have, we've been on a lot of sloping ground, there can be a lot of water runoff, and I've done a lot of work with grassed waterways and angles and tried many different strategies on the ranch, and it's always a battle between that and an economically viable efficiency in farming. I think you may have run into that with other farmers in the past also, is that to be efficient, you generally want to go large and straight and fast. And in strawberry farming, because it is drip irrigation and because I use a double low-flow tape, which means that the water is placed as carefully and closely to the plant, using, you know, so that the fertilizer and the water can be used as judiciously as possible. That has to be engineered on a very specific slope. It's all designed sort of on a fine-tuning basis more than on a just straight go basis. And in order to do that efficiently, you have to minimize your roads. You have to minimize some of the other aspects of it, and it's always a trade-off in how you maintain your water quality in those situations. And I'd say that I've always gone far more towards the number of things that I can do to improve water quality and runoff rather than the other way around, to the extent of other growers commenting, you know, and shaking their head and going, well, I don't think Rebecca's ever going to make it because she's spending all this money doing all these other things.
So I'm hearing you focused on minimizing water usage by various techniques, and you also have worked on, if there is any potential runoff, you using drainage systems that you have designed. Has, in addition to the water board staff's concern about you not doing the paperwork, have they brought anything to your attention that you could do better on?
On the farming aspect of
farming
it?
Farming aspect.
No, not at all. And I'd like to say quite the opposite. I've hosted field days, and I've had other farmers learning from what I do, and I feel very strongly.
Interrupt. I think you answered that question. I have a last question for you. From my understanding, then, is with the economic challenges, you've got a lot of folks standing in line looking for money from you. You've got a number of folks that owe you money that are not in line to pay you. We are seeking some funds to make sure you've got all the paperwork right.
Yes.
We don't have any particular complaints in regarding your farming practices. Mm-hmm. And if you pay us money to help you get your paperwork in order, that's money that won't be available to you to do a better job on stormwater management. Is that how you would see
my it? My new farming venture is structured differently. I'm more of a contract grower, and so if this last year was my first year of working in that capacity, and it gives me much more support in terms of having the financial tools available to do what I need to do a good job, and they've also extended me the opportunity to have help in the office sector time as well. So I really do feel like I've all my work in the past has paid off to where I'm in a better position to do both of those things. And to answer your question about less money available to take care of the water quality, I don't see any correlation there at all, because the new farming venture is different and pays me to do what I do, and these are bills that I'm addressing from a previous situation.
Do you have any brief suggestions of how we could help you get the paperwork done easier in the future?
Gosh, I don't know that I have suggestions on paperwork. I'm not, but I would like to mention that there was a time when I thought water quality issues, what I was seeing as I drive around and work, that I thought the situations were improving. You see, as someone who cares about water quality or farming in general or good farming in general or good soils in general, you see some appalling situations. And I don't know what the answer to your question would be, because I would like to see the growing practices improved. I think I benefited greatly from a lot of the programs that were available at the time, and I don't know how growers are accessing those currently. It may be that the waiver program is encouraging growers to do that, but I'm not familiar with what growers starting out or what other growers are.
Okay, thank you.
Encountering. Thank you.
Ms. Bozarth, are you aware of the education requirements as part of the Ag Waiver Program?
Yes.
Have you complied with those requirements?
Yes, very much so.
So you've taken the certification courses?
I go to a lot of different courses, yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions right now for Ms. Bozarth? We can then switch to... And did you have any questions of staff, Ms. Bozarth, at this point?
Well, no.
Okay.
Well, I guess I have a question.
Mr. Shallcross.
What really concerns me most is not even the allegations under the original complaint. What concerns me most here is your lack of communication with staff. You know, if you can't pay a bill, call the guy and tell him, and that includes our staff.
I understand.
Work with them, and, you know, we may wind up in the same place eventually, but, boy, you're going to stand in a lot better stead with us if you're communicating with us. And I understand, you know, you may want to sweep it under the rug because you can't deal with it, but just for future, when you know, if you get in these situations, just give us a call. At least, you know, there won't be this long record of non-responsiveness, which... as far as I'm concerned, counts to get you as much, if not more, than the original complaint. So that's what concerns me, not so much the original problem, which in and of itself is a problem, but this continued lack of communication is a really bad record to have to argue against.
Mm-hmm. Do you use a fax machine? Do you...
Right here.
Do I use a fax machine?
Yes.
I do. I have a fax machine at my office, yes.
Okay, and email?
Yes, I'm just starting to use email, yes.
Okay, I'd like you to give your fax number and your email addresses to staff before you leave today.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
All right, I have a couple of... Okay, Mr. Briggs?
Yes, I just wanted to point out that... right here.
Thank you.
Just wanted to point out that as Ms. McChesney and I are the advisory team to the board, that we have no record of any contact from you to us, and so I wanted to tell the board that. But I'm also stating it in the form of question to make sure that you haven't tried to make some contact that we're not aware of.
From my point of view, I'm not real sure what is the board and what are some of the capacities of some of the other people. I received a phone call.
I'm Roger Briggs. I'm talking about just us two specifically.
Oh, no, I've never. Board. I don't recognize your names or your...
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll move on.
Thank you.
Yeah, it would be the appropriate time for them to do.
Okay.
To do that.
All right. And is that part of their time?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Mr. Briggs, keep track.
I'm not sure if this is on or not.
No.
It's not on.
It says it's on.
Get it closer to your
mouth.
No, nothing.
So you're gonna have to really project your voice loud.
Okay. Oh, there we go. Thank
there
you.
There we go.
Ms. Bozar, I just wanted to ask you a few questions to kind of clarify and make sure I understand your testimony.
Sure.
You stated a number of times that you signed a settlement agreement. Did you at any point transmit that settlement agreement, that October 22nd, 2008 settlement agreement to staff? Are you alleging that you sent it to staff and we never received it, or what exactly is your testimony?
I don't remember quite what it was. I remember I got a call from someone. I thought it might have been, if I remember correctly, Allison Jones, saying that I needed to pick up and sign something before a deadline, and that's basically what I remember. And I would have, I mean, if I had to sign it by a deadline, then the point would have been to send it on by that deadline. That was an agreement to pay the $3,000 to.
Okay, because what we've received and testified to is we received a waiver from you, and then that the actual settlement package was sent back to us, returned, and not picked up. So, just to clarify what is in our records.
Yeah.
Okay. My next question to you is concerning your current company. That you said you've changed a name. It started as Pacific Azul, and you're currently farming 70 acres. Can you give me the name of your current?
Yes. Harvest Moon Ag Services, Inc.
And have you filed a notice of intent with the regional board under the Harvest Moon, Inc. corporation?
That's the one that I'm in the process of. That's the one that I mentioned started out under.
Okay.
Because that started in January as Pacifico Azul.
Mm-hmm.
It was still under Pacifico Azul. And that's the woman that I spoke to, Layla. And she sent me forms to fill out that I've got filled out that.
Is it possible that might be the cooperative monitoring
agency? That's what I understand it is. Now, do I need to do something different?
The regional
with you?
Board is a separate
entity. Okay.
You would have
okay.
to file a notice of intent with
okay.
us, too, also.
Okay.
You are currently listed, or you've mentioned, let me step back. You mentioned several times some financial difficulties that you're having with various entities. Have you ever communicated those difficulties to the enforcement staff at the regional board or provided us with
No.
any documentation of those?
No, I have not.
Okay. You are currently listed as the agent for service of process for Pacifico Azul with the state Secretary of State. We have had numerous occasions had difficulty getting you information. Is there a different address or different person or location at which we should be sending information?
My current office address is 133 Rogers, R-O-D-G-E-R-S, Rogers Road, Salinas, California. And I've had the same phone number. The phone that I use, I can give you that phone number,
mm-hmm.
is area code 831-970-4828. And that's been the same phone. I believe people might have been trying to call me on my home phone rather than that phone.
Okay.
I did have one phone call at that I tried to return, but the number that was left did not answer correspondingly.
Okay. Your home address is that where we have been attempting to serve you is still the same, though?
I have not changed. Yes, I'm still there. That is still an address.
Okay. That was all I had.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Bozarth. We're now going to move to...
I do have a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Jeffries.
Do you know what the total liability for this complaint is? The maximum liability, do you understand what the maximum liability
could
be?
That it could be?
Yes.
The $500,000.
Yes, $505,000.
Yes.
You're not operating on Padden Road anymore?
I have a home at Padden Road.
On Padden Road. That is your home address?
That's a home address.
Now, do you farm there as well?
No, I do not.
Okay. You're farming on Rogers Road at the present time?
Right. There is one of the ranches that I farm is on Rogers Road.
Is that adjacent to the Espinosa Lake?
No. Well, I don't know what Espinosa Lake is. There's a
right
there's
Rogers
a ditch
Road.
Below it. maybe farther on Rogers Road. Maybe it's a different Rogers Road. Espinosa Road.
Are you off Espinosa Road?
Yes. Yes, okay. On Rogers.
That's
when you say lake, yeah, there's an area that floods in the wintertime, correct?
Yes, that's Espinosa Lake.
Okay.
Santa Rita Creek flows into that.
Okay.
How close are you to that lake, Erin?
Very close. This last winter, water came up almost to my strawberry fields.
Okay. Is that very hilly?
Yes, parts of it are very hilly, and the hillier parts I have elected not to farm and turn those acres over to an artichoke grower who farms those parts.
Okay. Your soils there are heavier?
Yes.
There?
Yes.
Do you terrace your operation?
Yes, very much so. And in fact, one of the representatives of the new company came, and his first comment was it reminded him of the rice paddies that he'd seen.
Okay. I know you've said several times that you're very much a steward of water and erosion and those type of things. Don't you think that this enrollment and this process and the ag waivers are just as much a part of being a steward of a ranch and water?
Not to be disrespectful, it's not been my strong point, the paper process. And to be honest with you, I understand its purpose. But I see a disconnect between the paper and the field. And I don't mean that disrespectfully.
You mean with the ag waivers or you personally? You have a problem with paperwork? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not good at.
But you're good with
getting,
your hands
at
in
getting
the field.
To paperwork, I do spend far more time in the field than with paperwork. But that isn't my point so much as I don't think I'm speaking just for myself when I say that for growers, understanding what to do in a field situation has to do with the field. It doesn't have to do with filling out paperwork. And I've seen a lot of growers go to classes or presentations and they'll be fulfilling a function in a paperwork, but they won't necessarily be taking home the real importance of the issue. I think that's more what I mean. I understand your purpose, and I'd like to say again, I don't answer that disrespectfully at all. I'd like to bridge that gap. I wish there were a way to bridge that gap and have more people understand the dire need we have of taking care of the fields and the water that we do have. I feel very strongly about that, but I do also feel that there is a gap between the paperwork and the deed.
You personally?
I think in general. I think very much in general. I see a lot of field situations that I personally wonder, why is that happening? Why, you know, and the paperwork doesn't ensure that it will be taken care of.
Well, one of my concerns is with ag runoff is, and I think it's been said many times, but in that particular area, because I live in that area, Salinas. Mm-hmm. But your particular ranch, if you had a runoff, would run into the slough of Espinosa Lake and eventually in the Moss Landing Harbor and eventually in the Marine Sanctuary.
Right.
And if you had any pesticide or insecticides that were carried with that runoff, then that's going to affect a lot of environmental issues further down the stream.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons that we have the egg waivers, that we can bring everybody
into
together,
that process, yeah.
Into the process, and hopefully that we can curtail some of that issue.
Yes.
And avoiding the paperwork doesn't resolve it. If your personal belief is that paperwork is a waste of time, then we have another issue.
No, that's not my belief. I don't believe it's a waste of time. I believe if my resources are stretched, my first priority is to do the right thing in the field. And I'm glad you have a personal commitment to it. I'd like to tell you that in these last very heavy rains, we went through that beautifully, and I'm proud of that. And I think if I can contribute, I think where farmers can contribute in some of these areas is if you have an understanding of what you can do and what you should do. I spend a lot of time imparting that to the people that I work with, and it's a very difficult thing to do. Most people don't think at all about most people working in the field. I'm not talking about the farmers. I'm talking about the labor, those are the people that are actually in the field doing it and taking care of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on then to testimony of interested persons. Thank you very much, Ms. Bozar.
Thank you.
Chris O'Connor.
It says item 14.
Okay. So it does. Okay. I missed the vote. Are there any interested persons that wish to address the board on this item at this point in time? Yeah. No, Mr. O'Connor, I misspoke. Okay, don't worry. You're not being called up here. You're not under cross-examination. Okay. Yes, Kurt Schmidt.
My name's Kurt Schmidt with Preservation, Inc.
Go ahead.
On this one item,
can you speak into the microphone?
Kurt Schmidt, Preservation, Inc. Pacifico Azul, when this process started, did pay 3 years' worth of fees for participation in the cooperative monitoring program, and we verified that yesterday. And that's my only comment.
You don't care, I don't care.
Mr. Schmidt, it's a technicality, but you probably didn't stand when we introduced this item, and you were supposed to take the oath.
So if you can just come forward and take the oath, Mr. Young, I'll read
it. It's perfunctory, but we do have requirements.
I fully understand that. I didn't mean to.
You solemnly swear that the testimony that you just gave us in this matter was the truth?
Yes, it was.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Closing statement by Pacifica Azul. Ms. Bozarth, did you have any other comments that you wanted to address to the board at this time? Okay. Staff's closing statement.
In closing, I'd just like to state and remind the board that the Ag Waiver Program is a broad regulatory program. It applies to a large number of operations. The regional board seeks compliance with all those operations. Mrs. Bozarth was not enrolled or paying her share of monitoring fines until after issuance of our complaint. The regulatory integrity of the program is important to seeing real water quality benefits. We're glad to hear that Mrs. Bozarth is interested and dedicated to reducing water quality. Nonetheless, we still support our administrative civil liability order and the amount proposed, and that we ask in the future going forward that if there are further issues to work out with Ms. Bozarth, that we find an alternative way of service of reaching her, whether it be consent to electronic service or service through an attorney or other means. We've spent a lot of staff time and effort attempting to reach Mrs. Bozarth, and a lot of staff costs have been incurred in those efforts, what seems to be almost unnecessarily, and it's a shame. Again, you know, we're always just trying to achieve compliance, and we support our ACL order. Thank you.
Okay, any board comments or questions as to staff's closing statement? Do we have from you, Ms. Bozarth, the best way to contact you in the future? Was that information given to? Okay.
You know, it's kind of the podium,
just
please.
Come up.
Oh, I'd be glad to leave my fax and email number with anyone.
Okay.
I'd like to write. Is now the appropriate time to do it?
Yeah, now's the appropriate time to do it.
Do you want me to say it out loud?
You don't have to, but just give it to Mr. Packard.
Anything else?
Yes. What is the best way for staff to reach you?
My direct phone number.
Okay. The number that you gave earlier.
The 970-4828. Okay. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Recommendations by executive officer. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. Of course, it's a difficult situation with the financial problems and.
Yeah, Ms. Bozoff, we're done with asking you any questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you can give Mr. Packard that. Sit down there with them.
We're closed with all testimony at this point?
Not at this point. Right after Mr. Briggs gives his recommendations to us.
Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, we recognize it's a difficult situation. It's unfortunate, but it is important for the board to enforce the requirements. If the board does not enforce the requirements, then we can be pretty well assured that there will be additional instances of ignoring the requirements, and ultimately that does cause water quality problems. So I have no reason to change the proposed assessment amount, so I would recommend that the board adopt the order as prepared in the agenda item, the civil liability of $13,000. I guess I could add that in terms of the request made about some kind of a payment schedule, I'm advised that we have no flexibility as far as that goes, and the 30-day time period for that money to be paid is not flexible.
And if the board wants to choose to consider that, I can explain more how that's possible to achieve.
Why don't you go ahead and explain?
Well, under the water code, the board issues an order for a civil liability. The water code says it must be paid within 30 days of issuance. So there's a couple of options. One is to ask the enforcement team if they're willing to, following your order, work out a payment schedule with the discharger, which they could consider doing, because then they'd have flexibility based on that the way, if it's not paid, they would have referred to the Attorney General so they could work out some arrangement. The other way is to postpone adoption of an order and see if they can work out some schedule. But if you adopt an order, you're required to say that it has to be paid within 30 days.
But you're saying that the enforcement team would have discretion in terms of working with getting that penalty?
Correct. But the board would not.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Mr. Briggs?
No.
Okay. The hearing now is closed, and we can deliberate. Okay. Mr. Hodgson.
It seems to me that we need to approve this item, but I'm concerned about the reality of the fine being paid, and so whatever the best procedure is, I would like to see a plan worked out that requires some kind of definite payment, not a situation which would allow other obligations to be taken care of in before ours, but also a payment schedule that the Ms. Bozarth feels that she can comply with. I wouldn't want to see this come back again to us with having some kind of an agreement that has failed, and then we're facing another more serious enforcement situation.
Any other? Mr. Shopross.
Yeah. I like the idea of someone working out a payment agreement too, but given the history of the discharger here, For me to be comfortable with it, it would have to be pretty strict, and along the lines of if a payment is missed, then it immediately goes to the AG's office for collection, or her, however you want to set it up. But I agree with Mr. Hodgins that we need to make sure that, this gets paid, if indeed that's the way we go on this. Again, you know, this is something that could have been done at the $3,000 level if you had only, you know, contacted our staff. It's really too bad, because it sounds like you're doing a really good job in the field, and I agree, you know, that should count for something. But the other thing I wanted to ask staff was, can we get a breakdown on what you're asking the staff costs as opposed to the penalty fines? Is there a slide or something? Okay. I didn't find what page it was. If it's in the staff report, just give me the page number.
Three at the bottom.
$150.
No. Here's a slide here that breaks down exactly how the original liability was calculated, and then in the bottom adds the staff costs that were accrued since the complaint was issued.
Okay, and this is a question for counsel. Is staff cost required? Are we required to collect that?
No, the provision of the law that applies to this says that the board shall consider a number of factors. Okay. Among them are factors related to the behavior of the discharger, factors related to any water quality impacts, which aren't an issue here, and then other matters as justice may require, which is usually the area of where staff costs are considered. And you're not required specifically to collect staff costs. It's just one of the factors to take into account in the overall amount.
Okay. And I mean, see how quickly that adds up. You start at a pretty reasonable amount, and then okay, thank you.
Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. A couple of clarifying questions and some comments. One gentleman sworn in stated that some fees were paid. I wasn't sure that I understood that. What fees were brought current?
After the complaint was issued, Ms. Bozarth paid the cooperative monitoring fees that were owed for the years that she had not been enrolled. Okay. So she got caught up.
Okay, so that's not displayed up here.
That is, well, there's a component near the top, monitoring fee, $2 an acre.
So that's already been paid.
Right.
So that shouldn't be on the list. We're not going to charge them twice.
Well, just to explain, so at the time the staff issued the complaint, she had not paid that fee. After the complaint was issued, she paid that fee for the cooperative monitoring.
But right now it's paid.
As a follow-up, it's a factor. It was used as an indicator of where to set the liability. It's not that those fees are collected again and given to the cooperative monitor. It was used. There was a whole group of dischargers we brought the complaints against, and it was used as an indicator of culpability, of how much we should set the liability at. It was a per acre, how many fees they were not paying on a per imposed on a per acre basis as a means of establishing a range for the liability.
So when we're considering a potential fee to charge someone for, it could actually include fees they've already paid. They just would have been paid late. But then that's something you still use as a possible liability for?
We use it as an indicator of culpability of where to set the liability. It doesn't actually get paid again to the monitoring agency. It's just.
But we're going to collect the money.
Yes. It was how we exercise our discretion in determining the liability. We looked at how, and also plays into economic benefit.
That's interesting. We might come back to that. I'm concerned about a lot of staff time that's been put into this, and how we document staff time. And I do think there's a number of things I've learned from this that maybe we can learn how we can do things differently. But I certainly do want to have some documentation so we can learn from that. If we're continuing on a particular address that's not working, at what point do we try something else? One thing that I thought was interesting, and maybe Mr. Briggs could answer, there was a distinction of something called a field class. And I know in many cases folks learn in different ways, and going to a class in a classroom might be good for some folks. Actually having a hands-on field demonstration of actual methods that would be good, that might be something. Or do we currently offer that as a way for folks to learn what we're requesting them to learn? Do we have a what we could call a field class on the same information?
Well, I thought the reference to giving classes in the field was actually, if I understood correctly, Ms. Bozart was saying that
she
has hosted classes in the field.
Yes, and I'm wondering if that's something we are aware of or we offer. We require some amount of courses, I understand.
Right, and I'm not the one to answer that question, unfortunately, but I understand that there are lots of field as well as non-field opportunities available through mm-hmm. various providers.
So when we help folks, when we require a certain amount of coursework, we help folks know where they can get that training, and included in that is some opportunity to learn in the field.
Yes, we definitely have.
Good. Okay, thank you. And my concern I have, too, is with I have to agree that there's some responsibility on the part of the farm owner to have followed up better on this. I think, you know, I would encourage folks in the agricultural community that just as this board is sympathetic of complicated, tough times, I believe staff are as well. And I think it's unfortunate that some of this information didn't get included to staff, and there might have been a better outcome sooner. So I think that's important to recognize that responsibility. I am concerned about this amount of fees and how they're calculated, and sympathetic, and I'm wondering, it sounds like it's pretty arbitrary on our part. We can just assess with this input an amount we think is reasonable. Is that
well? Basically, the section of the law that is being enforced here is basically says if you fail to pay fees or submit reports, it's $1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. So the allegation is that there's a failure to comply with requirements to enroll in the waiver, which is submitting the notice of intent and paying the fees. So that's the maximum is $1,000 a day. So you add up $1,000 a day times however many days since this started, it's $500,000. So within that, the board then has the discretion to consider various factors, and the factors include like I said, factors related to a discharge, if there were one. So there's no allegation of any discharge in violation of anything.
No violation.
So there's no issue about toxicity of the discharge or any of that. The issue is failing to submit reports and pay fees required to the State Water Board and the monitoring program in a timely manner. And so those factors are ability to pay, the effect on ability to continue in business, any voluntary cleanup efforts taken, any prior history of violations, the degree of culpability, economic benefit or savings, if any, resulting from the violation, and other factors as other matters as justice may require. So here they're looking at, they looked at these factors that are discussed in the complaint and in the order, and the enforcement staff came up with these basic issues and determined that it was appropriate to, for example, look at the culpability and economic benefit by looking at how much did they have to pay. You know, they're supposed to pay $1 an acre, didn't pay that in a timely manner, so that was reasonable to look at that under culpability. And economic benefit, because
that's the part they paid.
But they didn't pay it before the complaint was issued. So forget about what they did afterwards. What they did before is they didn't pay it, and they then saved that money essentially at that time. Okay. I mean, once they paid it, then the amount that the economic benefit is really more what, you know, what you, what's typically looked at is if they had to borrow the money, what interest would they have avoided paying if they borrowed the money to pay that amount, which for $431 or $863 times two would have been pretty minimal. But, you know, but basically you look at economic benefit, culpability, right, ability to pay, those kinds of factors.
And when you say economic benefit, you're also considering the person's ability to stay in business and that economic
right. Economic benefit is a separate thing, like the what they avoided. What did they avoid paying by not complying? Mm-hmm. So say it was a report and it would cost them, you know, $500 to hire somebody to or to the time it would take to fill out a report, and they never turn in the report, then that's $500 they avoided.
Okay.
You know,
that's
whereas
cost.
Ability to pay is looking at their financial issues.
Okay. Yeah. Last two questions. One, we do offer courses on how to do what is required in the field to do a better job with stormwater management or agricultural farming. Do we offer any assistance with filling out all the paperwork and training or assistance in that area? Is that
well, there's available? No allegation here of not filling out the form properly.
Well, I think it's the question that the paperwork didn't get filled out.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is that something we offer?
I don't know.
If you look at the record, there is an NOV prior to issuing the complaint explaining what paperwork needed to be filled out with contact information on who to contact if there was questions on providing that information.
So if someone followed up with that, a staff person would sit down with them and help them through the forms the first time?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hayashi.
Enforcement is one of the tools that we have to make to ensure that our orders get carried out. I mean, it's an unfortunate deal, but that's what it is. If we were to go back, and we also need to maintain consistency, because we've had enforcement actions before us, and, you know, they've settled. So what would, if we went back to the original amount of $3,000 from that time, and we added the interest on top of that to get us back to this day, what would that amount be? And would that get us, would that kind of help out the deal? I don't know.
I'm just thinking. Sounds reasonable.
And if we were to take that and on top of that, we have to deal with this staff time. I don't know whether we deal with it or not, but I need to know what that number would be if we went to just as a starting point. And I have no idea what the state interest.
I just want to clarify. The original complaint amount, you see it up there under total and complaint. It was $9,136.20.
No, I understand that, but I'm going back one step further too. Where she agreed to pay the $3,000 and the $3,000.
We never received an agreement.
Okay, but I understand that. I understand. But it said it was verbally. Somebody said somewhere it said it was verbally agreed to on the telephone somewhere in this during this today.
And the reason we're hesitant to bring up terms of a settlement is they are normally not introducible in future proceedings.
But it did come out in today's deal that there was a verbal settlement for $3,000. Did it or did it not come out?
And again, the evidence codes establish that type of evidence isn't admissible in future proceedings to denote.
That's not the question I'm asking.
Oh, just a second.
Wait, hang on. You guys brought it up.
It's in your staff report.
Hang on one second, everybody. Ms. McChesney.
I'm searching the record to see if
I think what the evidence code deals with is whether evidence of settlement agreements can be used to prove liability or something like that.
Yes, that's how it says. Normally those discussions are confidential. We did submit a staff report demonstrating what other complaints had been paid in other complaints in response to other complaints. There are other settlements out there for the $3,000 amount. Yes, we will not contest that. Yeah.
But it was also somewhere
It was in Mrs. Bozarth's testimony today, yes.
Somebody was on our staff side that somebody said that There was something here because it came up first that said, well, during this correspondence, there was an agreement to pay.
Mr. Hayashi, it's a boundary we can't cross. It may have leaked out somehow. But
it was brought up here today.
I know, but there's an evidence code prohibition about getting into settlement agreements.
As I recall,
and it really has nothing to do with the issues that we're supposed to be deciding, which is whether there should be an ACL issued and in what dollar amount, whether we should modify it or
we're the ones that will set that dollar amount.
That's correct. But that particular item that you want to get into is something that we are not supposed to consider.
All right. So let me take that back then. If hypothetically we were to set the amount at $3,000 from the date of this.
Okay, well, I just want to say,
from the settlement date and add the interest to that, what would that number be?
Just to back up on your first question, in the staff report it says, on October 22nd, 2008, the Water Board Assistant Executive Officer proposed settlement terms. The discharger telephoned Water Board staff approximately 1 week later and indicated its agreement to the terms. So that's in your staff report.
Yes, we avoided stating the terms because...
Right, and yeah so what the terms are is one thing. So what they are, but that the fact that
yes,
there was oral... That's what Mr. Hayashi was asking.
It is clearly in the record that there was an oral agreement to settle and that it was not followed up.
Right.
With a written, yes. I have no
objection
to that.
Okay, that's all that Mr. Hayashi was trying to confirm.
Yes, I agree.
And it was Ms. Bozart's testimony about the amount.
Correct.
That was in there. Right.
So now my question is, if you go back to the time, the date that it could have been, and you add the interest to that and bring it forth to this day, what is that number? Or what would that number be?
I don't have a calculator.
I'm not sure what kind of interest rate we have to use, but the going interest rate would yield not much more than $3,000.
Yeah,
but one of the points there, Ms. Hayashi, is that would ignore all the additional staff time.
But I didn't say to ignore the staff time. I just asked for one part of that deal. I asked for if you took the $3,000 and you added the interest to it today, and there's a legal interest rate that's published for the state of California.
Yeah.
And I don't want to quote it because I'm not sure. But I'm just asking, what would that number be? I never said...
10% would be 300. And so I don't know what the rate is that's generally used in the Bend model or otherwise.
Okay.
For cost of money, I think it's somewhere close to 5.
Okay. So it's somewhere between 5 and 10%. So if you just use 10% as a number, what is it? $330 a year? Something like that.
$300 a year.
$300
right.
a year. And you multiply that times how many years?
How many years?
1 year?
The complaint was issued in 2007.
It's been about a year. Yeah, a little bit over a year since the settlement. But.
Okay, so it would make it $3,500 just for round numbers. And then you add staff time. I mean, do we need to add? I don't know. I'm just asking these questions. So if you came from that, and then you gave...
Well, you're not required by law to add the staff time. You're required to consider other matters as justice may require, which
so then,
typically considers the staff time.
And let me ask a question. I think I know the answer to this about staff time. That's why I'm jumping in here. Sorry, John.
No problem.
If we do collect staff time, that doesn't necessarily go to staff.
Right.
That doesn't go to reimburse
our
organization for the staff time, right?
Does it impact?
That's just the way of estimating a penalty.
But can't you request 50% back? Depending on the amount of liability imposed, staff can request 50% back from the cleanup and abatement fund, depending on the final liability amount of the ACL.
What's the drop? What's the line?
If it's
State Board will consider reimbursing us all of our staff costs up to 50% of the total penalty amount.
At any threshold?
I
believe so.
And do we normally request it?
Yes.
And do we normally get it?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Okay. Point of clarification, you said the total penalty amount. Aren't you referring to the staff cost amount?
What I meant to say is we request all of our staff costs for an amount up to one half of the total penalty amount.
Right, just the staff cost, not the total penalty amount.
Right.
Up to half of the penalty amount.
So if our staff for instance, if you adopted a penalty of $13,000 and staff cost was $6,250, we could request the total $6,250 back from the state board because it's less than 50% of the total penalty.
I see.
Okay. Dr. Hunter?
I didn't.
You've been waiting patiently.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And just briefly, Ms. Bozarth, I want to thank you for taking time to be to express to us the situation and to be so candid and forthright in helping us to understand the situation you've been in, and we're very glad that you made the effort to be here today and help us resolve this, because the Ag Waiver Program is something that we value, we've worked very hard on, and you're part of that community, so we're glad that you were able to come here today to respond to this very important issue. So that said, I'm looking at those calculations, and I have one question for staff. The multiplier that's applied, I note that at one point staff costs of $2,500 are added in, and then a liability multiplier is applied again, and then at the tail end you have $3,750 of staff costs. So at very least, could we not apply that multiplier to staff costs and take the fine down to something more like $10,300. I'm not sure why you would add the multiplier to staff costs.
You're asking the prosecution staff that question?
Yeah, I'm asking staff.
Yeah, I think that's up to you to decide to do that or not. It's not really their...
Sure, but I can explain.
They just show how they do it.
I can explain the logic that went into this. This was the formula that was used for all the ag waiver cases that we brought, and it was, again, as Ms. McChesney discussed, we had a broad liability of where to peg our recommended liability at $1,000 a day. The potential maximum here was $505,000. So we chose uniformly across the board with all the ag waiver cases we were bringing at that time to look at these factors as indicators of culpability, economic benefit, and then, yes, we did add a liability multiplier for deterrence and enforcement to compel enforcement. That's that initial amount, that $9,136.20 that you see. Since the issuance of the complaint, the additional staff costs is for additional staff time that has been expended to pursuing this specific case. So if that gives you an indication of our thought process when we exercised our discretion in determining a recommended economic benefit amount.
Okay. I'm still not clear. I mean, if staff costs were $2,500, that's the cost.
Yes.
They just chose to multiply based on liability, based on the factors of failing to comply and culpability factors to multiply it by
two.
Right.
Okay. So I'm proposing that one consideration would be to take that $2,500 out of those calculations and add it in, similar to the bottom line, $3,750, $2,500 staff costs, and not include it in the multiplier. I don't see a reason for doing that, but that's just one consideration that I'm suggesting.
And to sort of piggyback on that,
right.
I'm not sure you need to multiply the multiplier on the economic benefit either. I mean, the economic benefit was one time, just like the staff cost.
So then,
now, if this were a real bad actor here, we may not be working this hard to cut you some slack, but you seem like a really honest person and trying to do the right thing.
You know, my own thoughts are that we can go ahead and try to manipulate this for a few thousand dollars one way or the other. I think that this is a situation where We have an operation that has invited a lot of this on themselves, has, you know, required staff to exert an awful lot of effort and time to try to seek compliance. It's pretty clear in terms of what happened and what didn't happen. Had there been more reciprocal communication from Ms. Bozarth, I would be, you know, very willing to try to, you know, cut a lot of slack here. But this is one of those opportunities where it's like cost recovery. Something has happened. You have a very specific individual operation that has done something, and it's a way to recover costs that the taxpayer is footing. I mean, it's one of those easy things to cherry pick out. I'm in favor if you want to take out some of the multipliers, you think that's appropriate. Don't have a problem with that. I really want to see compliance. I want to see the current operation enrolled immediately. I mean, for someone to say, oh, I didn't know how to fill out the form or didn't know what to do, the staff of this board will sit down with anybody. You're over the phone, make arrangements to get something filled out. I want to see just more willing effort to engage and get something done. It's critical to the Ag Waiver Program that everybody get on board and be treated the same way. And unfortunately, Ms. Bozarth, you know, you present an opportunity for us to make an example of. I like your effort and your interest in being concerned about water quality. That's what we want, completely. No question about it. You know, we want that from everybody. But the other part of this operation or this program is to get everyone wrapped up, make sure they're getting educated, you know, through a program that has been adopted and is going through. This is now in the fifth year or so of it. So that's also a critical component. And then having a farm management plan. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Farm management plan. To be developed. Maybe you have it. I don't know. I don't know any of the details. But all these things are important. I think the fact that you're willing to pay the full amount of the fine over time, to me, would be fine in and of itself, and I would just direct staff to, or the settlement, I mean the enforcement team, to seek an appropriate time schedule so that you could get that, you know, money to the board. But I'll defer to the rest of you if you want to cut some slack here on the amount.
Mr. But Chairman?
I would like to wrap it up sooner than later so we could move on with our agenda.
I understand that. Mr. O'Malley. I have been waiting for a while, so I have accumulated a few comments.
Go ahead.
And I do need to repeat a few, again, that I'm concerned about. With the staff's presentation, again, we saw a presentation of calculation of fees. We had to hear testimony from another person that actually a portion of those fees were already paid, and I think that's not something that would be generally known. I am concerned that we not only want to help our community be able to apply with these rules and regulations that produce water quality, but I think we as board and staff can learn also how we could help in this better. And to me, I think we need to do better on documenting our conversations with folks, and there might be some things to understand from that process. What I understand is there are a number of items for us to consider in setting fees, and also to understand that staff potentially are going to be reimbursed up to 100% of fees for their activities. And so that's a plus. It's also maybe a concern in the community that it can be self-serving. The board is not bound by any particular formula for assessing these fees. We have to weigh a lot of items, and I think everyone should be treated fairly. However, we've got a team of staff presenting some facts, and when you have a large person coming before us with a team of lawyers, they probably are equally prepared to present a lot of information. We've got a single farmer coming in, they may have less ability to do that. And I think all that in mind, I would like to see us work a little bit more on the training side with folks, especially it sounds like on the paperwork as a barrier for small operations. And with that, I would just assume if we're going to pick a number, I heard an offer to pay the $3,000. I think that's a fair range to consider. And I would, for discussion throughout the motion, that we set a fee of $3,000 on this item.
Is that a motion that you're making?
Yes.
Discussion on the motion. Discussion on the motion, Mr. Shelf.
Yeah, I think that doesn't send the right message. I'm certainly, what I would like to see happen is the $1,205 for the economic benefit and the $2,500 for staff costs unmultiplied, so it would be subtracting $3,705. So you're only really collecting those once. But I think certainly that the staff time involved should be collected. Again, as was pointed out, these are costs that the taxpayers are paying that this person has chosen for whatever reason to rack up. And I think that's a fair thing. So,
well, had we another methodology, we might have been able to reduce the staff time to get to compliance too. So I'm looking for ways that we could.
That's right, but we don't have that information right now on this, and this is the numbers that we get, and I trust our staff not to inflate numbers and to come up with a fair number for staff time involved. So I'd be more interested in reducing it by that $3,705 and having the enforcement staff work something out, some sort of payment plan, a very strict payment plan that if one payment is missed.
Is that a motion, Mr. Shelfra?
No.
It's
discussion on the motion. And so
I need to modify the motion.
Is that a substitute motion, Mr. Shelfra's?
No, it's not Mr. Shawcross's motion. It's Mr. O'Malley's motion.
Yeah, but well,
Mr.
I will let me offer a substitute motion. I would reduce the amount of the fees that have already been paid and take out both multipliers and take that amount to work on a payment plan with staff, and that would be acceptable.
Okay, why don't we...
Mr. Chair, before we go ahead, Mr.
vote
Chair,
on anything, I just have a couple questions, if I may. In the testimony, because it says in the administrative order that it was a California corporation, but we found out it's not. It was a partnership, now a single proprietor. It was not a corporation. That's what I heard from the... Pardon?
Yes, corporation.
Oh, general partnership. Okay. All right, fine. Thank you. Because I think the question by Mr. Hayashi was asked if it was a corporation, and I didn't hear a response. The second thing is that Patton Road is in Monterey County, not in Watsonville, but your mailing address is Watsonville, California. So the draft order says irrigated farming operation located in Watsonville in Monterey County. In Watsonville should be stricken and just put in Monterey County. But your mailing address is correct, Watsonville, California. Patton Road, Watsonville, California.
And there were in the past, there were Acres Farm in Watsonville.
Okay. So you had a dual operations. Okay. All right. Because it's kind of confusing because it says in Watsonville in Monterey County. Uh-huh. And Watsonville isn't in Monterey County.
Anything else, Mr. Jeffries?
No, I think we should call for the question.
Okay, wait. Dr. Hunter, did you have anything to add at this point? Okay.
Well, I should just say that I would like to see the fee reduced for the reasons that have been stated today, that we want to recognize the work of this farmer, her stewardship, and otherwise I would not consider reducing the fee. So I just want to state that. So
the penalty, you mean, not the fee.
Yeah, penalty. Okay. Pardon me. Penalty.
Okay. And have you computed what that reduced amount would be?
I wanted to make just real quickly a representative from the Farm Bureau wanted me to draw to your attention, because she was from the conversation, that Ms. Bozart did in fact take the class, as we have said before and as stated in our staff report, in February 2003, and to address some of Mr. Amali's concerns, I believe that class would have provided education on the forms that needed to be filed as well. The total with no multipliers that we come up with, is that including all staff costs?
Yeah, all staff costs.
All staff costs, no multipliers, $7,886.
Okay.
That's also less the initial fee that was paid late?
No.
Well, where, how did you get the $7,000?
It was in the first number in white, $431.55.
So I was suggesting that be eliminated too, because my understanding was that was the fee that was paid late. Is that correct or not?
But that,
yeah. Well, that's not the fee. That's just how they determined to calculate economic benefit and culpability by they only paid the fee after they got issued
right.
the complaint. So that's not the fee. That's just a way of demonstrating
right,
how they came up with, since the maximum is $1,000 a day and
yeah.
$500,000.
The point of also including that as a culpability factor is that it reflects an accounting for the acreage involved in the violation. Whereas if this would have been a penalty we were bringing against a larger acreage operation, that number would have been higher. So it was a means by which to incorporate the acreage accounting in our culpability analysis. It wasn't to get that money.
I understand.
To the
Did you subtracted the amount for the education cost, since you just stated that
I believe all this amount did was take out the two times twos, the two multipliers.
Okay.
That's all this amount did.
Okay.
I see. That's fine.
Okay, so what was that amount? 7,000?
$886.
$7,886. Okay. Is there a motion at this point in time?
Is that the motion, Mr.?
Well, my motion actually was, eliminating the two multipliers, but also eliminating that dollar amount of $431.55 that is apparently still in the calculation. That's still more than I'm comfortable with, but I'd accept that as a compromise for the board.
I'll second that motion.
That would be 7455.
He's okay with the 7886.
Right, but then subtracting the 431.
No.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Subtract the 431.55 from that number, which.
Okay, and just so we're clear, what would that number be?
She just added up at less than 7,500, I think.
I didn't do the 7.
Yeah, I want to see the number calculated. So
7,455.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, he wants to subtract that.
The reason I went to law school is because I'm not good at math, so just to be clear.
7,455.
Okay, 7,455. Okay, that is the number of the administrative civil liability component for the motion. All right?
And I will second that.
Okay, this has been seconded. All those in favor?
We're not doing the... We can't...
He did a substitute motion of his 3,000.
No, I know, but I don't want us to get in a situation where she has to pay it in 30 days.
Well,
we
don't have any, the board doesn't have the ability to do that.
Directed.
What she would need to do is file.
I just want to make sure what we're voting on allows them to do that.
And my original motion did suggest that what a payment amount we did, we would expect staff or request staff to work out a realistic payment plan.
Okay.
On that amount.
Go ahead.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We will take a break for 15 minutes.
And just so you know that the order as proposed will need to take into account the that change, and so I'll.
Okay.
Okay.
Here, Chris.
Yeah, I think I've already organized. Thanks.
This just came to me.
All right, thanks.
And we're going